Well, stage four, five categorised climbs, the last of them category one, and the first time in Tour de France history that an inline stage is finished on a category one climb inside the first four stages of the event, and it was worth waiting for as well.
Martin goes, Guillaume Martin from Cofidis. Great move, actually, on the right-hand side of the road, and that's going to hurt Sepp Kuss, because he'll have to try and get across to this Frenchman who is completely rejuvenated in his career. But Primoz Roglic shuts him down and gets straight across. Bernal going with him, Julian Alaphilippe throwing his bike from side to side. Tadej Pogacar on his wheel. Martin, though, holding firm. Still got 350 metres to go, and they have got across to him, and now he's got a problem, a mighty problem.
Bernal couldn't hold the wheel there of Roglic when he accelerated across. Alaphilippe did. Pogacar there in third. Nairo Quintana, Bernal, Miguel Angel Lopez, and there's Mikel Landa as well, so Thibaut Pinot, so it's all the favourites.
Miguel Angel Lopez moving towards the front, Roglic looking very, very strong, Guillaume Martin leading the whole race out now. Roglic opens up his sprint, here comes Tadej Pogacar, it's Slovenia number one and number two on the road. Primoz Roglic taking Tadej Pogacar to the line, and Roglic is going to make a big statement here. He takes the win, Pogacar in second place, close between Martin and Quintana for the final bonus second in third and fourth, and Yates was in that group. Sepp Kuss celebrates the victory off his teammate.
That final climb was like having your fingernails pulled out slowly with a pair of pliers, wasn't it, Pete? It was just,
it was like that for some of the guys, yeah. Not for everyone,
that's true.
But yeah, I mean, it was, looked pretty solid, didn't it? I mean, it was just a ferocious pace the whole way up, though. I mean, we didn't get to see much action, but that was why. It was too hard.
52 kilometres an hour Roglic hit in the sprint.
52
mountain stage.
Holy cow. That's crazy. Yeah, no, I mean, it was a really fast day all day again. It was just, they were kind of that break of six riders mm-hmm. went off and they never let it go. About 4 minutes maximum did it, and then they just nailed it back and held it at 3 minutes and whittled it down. But it was fast all day, and then they hit the tailwind with what, 40 Ks to go, and it just got faster. And by the time they got to that final climb, the final climb was a big road on beautiful tarmac, wide, and it just turned into a war of attrition from the back, and teams taken over. Alaphilippe had nobody left, but it looked really painful in a kind of, as Pete says, not in a very dramatic way, more of a just hanging on for dear life, and then Wout van Aert just humiliating everybody again.
It was the least hairpinny. Yeah. Category one climb I've ever seen. It just seems to be a straight line.
It was category one as well. Yeah, I didn't see it like the way watching it there, but I mean, Adam Yates summed it up well, didn't he? He was like kind of just like wherever you were just stuck.
Yeah.
In the sprint, unless you're Roglic, obviously, but for everyone else, it was just kind of a case of hold the wheel and hope for the best.
Unless you were Roglic or the other Slovenian in that lead group, Tadej Pogacar. Who's looking good. I mean, we're 4 days in, nothing's form can go any which way, especially this year, but Pogacar's looking good as well, wasn't he?
Slovenian 1-2. Mm. Slovenian 1-2 on the stage, wasn't it? And don't forget the first race that was televised post-lockdown of any description on the internet, and we all kind of scrabbled around to try and find a feed of it, was the Slovenian National Road Race Championship, wasn't it, where those two finished in that order, Roglic... Just, in fact, very similar. You know, it was right towards the top of a really quite a similar climb that Roglic gapped Pogacar quite considerably, actually, by 100 or so metres towards the end, and Pogacar finished. And then a few days later, Pogacar turned table and won the National Time Trial Championships.
Yeah. Would you say that climb suited Pogacar? Teach me, please. I've been learning this.
Today? It's like saying like today, but in a funny way.
Pogacar.
But with an A.
Pogacar.
Yeah. Well, no.
Pogacar?
No.
Pod.
Pog.
Pogacar.
No, there's no Achka. There's some arch. You know, an archer, like someone who's archer. With a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Think about that, right? And then stick Pog on the front.
Oh, Pogacar.
There you go. Bingo.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, got it.
Chuck it.
Pogacar.
Yeah.
That climb suited him more than what's to come in the race? I mean, or not?
I don't know enough about him.
He's too young for even him to know.
I know where you're driving at, Pete, because I think his first general classification success was at the Tour of California.
Yeah.
Last year, wasn't it? And that was quite a Californian climb today.
It was actually, yeah.
So I know what you're driving at, but my memory's shot to pieces. David,
he did a lot last year, though, didn't he? We weren't surprised when he got to the Vuelta.
No.
What was the other one? Was it Basque Country or something?
Algarve.
Something like that. Valencia. I can't remember. It definitely wasn't just California.
No, it was three states.
He'd done Romandy.
Yeah, it was consistent throughout the year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember his Vuelta victories. What kind of climbs they were on, David?
Oh, a stupid steep one. The one...
So there you go.
That was the one, you know, years ago when Froome Dog got caught out.
Los Muchachos.
Yeah. No, the one over Santander. No?
No, they're a really steep one.
Where Aru won.
Just like four people with no memory.
We're trying to understand what suits him as a rider.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In Valenciana, he won across atop a really short, steep one, beating Valverde in a sprint. He won a really long, steep one at the Vuelta, one of those real goat paths where he kind of left everybody behind, left Roglic behind, I think. And then he won the final penultimate stage of the Vuelta where it was big, long, draggy mountains, Spanish big mountains. So he can win on super steep and long, big ones.
Yeah.
And short, sprinty, crazy ones, Spanish Valverde style.
Well,
so basically everything uphill he can do.
It's all
Froome, in the interview with you guys on TV, he really downplayed how well he said, you know, in the Dauphiné, remember he mentioned, oh, he didn't really see much of...
Yeah, I thought that was...
Like straight to the point, we didn't see anything of him. He said he was
except on the final day where he rode a tactical and physical masterclass. I thought Pogacar too, but anyway.
But yeah. He's very good, isn't he?
Yeah. Really, yeah.
And it's that was I think that what we were taking last year at the Vuelta was just his mastery, kind of tactical.
Yeah.
Like he was just so cool headed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he wasn't getting carried away. He would only go attack once, and every time he did, it worked.
Yeah.
You never see him do... He never failed when he attacked.
That's so true.
Whenever you just do one move, he'd let everyone else play. He's like a Rio Costa. He sits there and he just watches and he waits. And he lets everyone else kind of play their games. And then he just does one big move and he leaves them all.
Mm.
That was my takeaway of Vuelta last year. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You're a
really old...
Okay, so that's the first placed and second place riders in
I'm finished talking about...
In the stage.
What's his name?
Pogacar.
I haven't finished talking about him yet.
Oh, okay.
I just want to say that I quite like this little world of Slovenian racing from which they come, and there's a verbal coincidence in his backstory in that the first... He comes from a little town outside of Ljubljana, which is a capital city, actually, a ski resort, and the first amateur cycling club he signed for as a teenager was a Ljubljana-based cycling club. Sponsored by a bike brand, Slovenia's heritage bike brand, a bit like kind of Pashley or something. They're Pashley. And the bike brand's called Rog, as in Roglic. So his first cycling car was called the Rog Cycling Club.
Love it.
Which I just thought was a nice coincidence, that's all.
Love it.
By the way, they are a bit like Rally, actually. They're more like Rally, utilitarian kind of bikes, and, you know, go back a long way. And then went through a bit of a... I think they went bankrupt, but the brand name and the has been brought back and sort of new life has been breathed into it. And you go online and you can buy yourself a Rog bike to celebrate Slovenian success.
As we saw at the end of the Vuelta, where there was a kind of Slovenian love-in as Roglic tried to get Pogacar
on the podium. I think they get on pretty well.
Well, there was a nice moment when Roglic U-turned and headed back to the protocol area and shook hands, and there was a big smile between him and Pogacar. And I think whereas in the Vuelta, the kind of love-in started, you know, was in the final few stages. We're only four stages in, and
talking about bikes,
they'd be good allies, wouldn't they?
Before you finish there, Matt, I was just going to say, talking about bikes when I was riding in today. I just... probably discussed it before. I was just literally looking at my bike and I was thinking, this is literally what this is made for, just getting to places. And then someone decided to stick a line in the road and create this mad thing called a bike race. And it's just
true.
Yeah, it was literally me to get from A to B, nothing more.
Yeah.
You know?
Well.
And it's just, yeah.
The Drazine, which is the original bike, that was an early 19th century invention by Carl Friedrich von Dreis, his name was, from Karlsruhe in southern Germany. He invented it because the rural horse population of Central Europe had starved to death because of the failure of a crop and all across the continent. And the crops failed that summer because of a huge volcanic eruption in Indonesia. Of a volcano that cast an earth... No, it wasn't Krakatoa, it was Tambora or something like that. That cast a massive...
Tandoori.
Something like that, cloud across the world, and right. Basically it, you know, cut out the sunshine and the crops didn't ripen, and so the harvest failed, and the first victim of that were all the horses, And so all these farmers were left without any horses, and they couldn't get from A to B. So he invented the drazier.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there horses weren't really Knees supposed to be made to be raced on either, were they? But here we have it. They also race. I mean, just like find anything you can that's a mode of transport and just start racing at cars.
Human nature.
It's human nature.
We had a bit of a race from our studios back to the hotel last night, didn't we, Pete? I opened up the hostilities and you countered me and put me in my place.
Yeah, but let's not forget the bike I'm on compared to... I mean, I was trying to drop old Millerboy here the best I could on his Brompton. He was still there, was coming into the castle 500 metres to go.
Miller was such a Rui Costa on yesterday's ride, wasn't he?
Wasn't he?
I was.
If he was Rui Costa, who were you?
Guillaume Martin.
You were... You're such a Guillaume Martin. Did you envisage him when you attacked?
From now on, I will. Now I've fixed in my mind that I'm Guillaume Martin. I want to talk about Guillaume Martin. Okay. What else should we say a bit more about the stage? Because there was plenty of stuff to talk about in that breakaway, wasn't there, Matt?
Yeah, there was plenty of stuff in the breakaway and in the behaviour of the peloton, wasn't there? I mean, you know, it was to coin it, Quickstep all the way through. And it's funny, they are the kind of the ultimate sprinter's team. And Alaphilippe is like a climb. Well, I don't know if he's a climb. I don't know what he is. Just everything.
Yeah.
But he approaches his mountain stages exactly like the sprinters approach the sprint stages. And he's bothered. What they're all about is stage wins, isn't it? And then you... Oh, blimey. So we've got Primož Roglič interrupting the pod. and
right,
there
we'll
he is sprinting, and they're about winning here and now. And then what if there's more, you know, to come from that?
Yeah, it says a lot about actually the makeup of their team. It goes to show that it's not just bluffing him saying he's not going for GC, because they certainly didn't bring a GC team here.
No.
They've just brought their kind of a classic to Koenig. Usual suspects.
Yeah. Sort of Bob Jungels.
But it works because, I mean, they did what they just can do. We were talking about that in commentary, actually. They do what they can, when they can, and everybody expects that. And then the teams whose duty is to take over when they're done, do it. So it's almost kind of all pre-planned. Everyone knows, well, De Koenig, in the team meetings, they'll be, well, De Koenig can control it till the climb. And then we've got to be prepared because we're going to have to take control after they do, because they won't be able to.
And it's funny the way that no one else, you know, all that, you know, Groupama FDJ could have brought Arnaud Démare but didn't bring Arnaud Démare, because when you're going for GC, you don't do that anymore. You don't try and combine the two things. But De Koenig in Quickstep, just break all the rules of all the, you know, like... It's only day three, day four, so don't start burning energy now because there's 3 weeks of this race, so you've got to... No, we're just...
I think it's completely mystifying that Groupama FDJ didn't bring Arnaud Démare, the more I think about it. Because now you see how feeble their team is in the mountains for Thibaut Pinot. Godu was amazing today. I have to
Poor
say, absolutely
Godu
incredible.
And, yeah.
And
yeah.
Mollard appeared and then did a bit, but not much more than that. It's not like they left Arnaud Démare out to pack their team with world-class climbers, is it?
No.
I don't understand it. And also, he would have won a stage by now.
Easily, I think. He was flying.
Yeah.
He is flying.
It's really odd.
It could be like an internal thing with like Pinot's kind of faith from the management that we're only going for this. And the moment you bring Démare, it'll feel like he's diluting, you don't believe in me.
Like Wiggins and Sky in 2012 and Cavendish.
Yeah.
What about, I just think, because so Evenepoel, who obviously...
Pinot leading up Démare on the Champs-Élysées in the yellow jersey. That'd be a sight, wouldn't it?
That would be a sight. In France.
It would, yeah. In France, yeah. Démare in his national championship. Would be a sight, that. Jesus. Go down in the history books.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, though, because he's not in the bike race.
No, not this year.
That's true. No, I was thinking about De Koenig Quickstep and who they could have bought. They could have bought Jack Haig.
Yeah.
I don't mean Jack Haig. I mean, who do I mean? James Knox.
James Knox.
Thank you.
Giro.
And could have bought Jack Haig.
Yeah. But their big decision they took earlier on in the year was to send Evenepoel, who's obviously crashed and that's all changed, to the Giro.
To the Giro.
But imagine if they'd just said, send him to the Tour.
Just send
to
him
ride over. As Wout van Aert rides for Primož Roglič, to ride for Julien Alaphilippe.
Awesome. It would have been epic, wouldn't it?
Remco just ripping the race to pieces on the front.
That would be different.
For fun.
It'd be dangerous, that, wouldn't it? For everyone. Because you just find Evenepoel, he could be in yellow now, in his own right, couldn't he?
Well,
you have two people, they're quite similar, the way they're kind of ride. I mean, Evenepoel usually goes attacks even further out than Alaphilippe, but I mean, I don't know if it would have worked in that aspect. I mean, you can play off each other, obviously, but I think it's...
Or if you just make it one-dimensional and just say, you're not here to win it, you're just here to whack
but
Van Aert.
Is he too strong to...
Whack Van Aert, you know?
Do you know what I mean?
Because Wout van Aert had a huge impact on the climb today, didn't he? Like, up until the point where Wout van Aert got on the front, I think Bob Jungels was the last rider to do a turn before that. It was actually quite clumped up with about 4K to go. There were a lot of people still there.
And Jumbo-Visma kind of disappeared, didn't they?
Yeah,
it was kind of strange. They came in two waves, didn't they? And in between, they sort of drifted back. And you thought, oh, they've gone. They've messed this up, haven't they? And suddenly they were there again.
Yeah, because they got a technique of just riding the whole day at the front, like in second position, the whole team, which does, and they've always got somebody in the wind, it seems like, so it does seem like they're wasting energy. And then, as you said, at the bottom of the climb, they kind of disappeared back, and you're like, well, there you go, you've wasted all that energy. And then about 4Ks to go, they all came up, and it was like, oh, God, no. And then, well, Van Aert took over, like, sort of 4Ks, and then he went to 1.5, 1.6Ks to go?
Or less? I mean, 1.1, I don't... Then Kuss took over.
Yeah, that was impressive.
He got a different role, but he kind of does the same thing higher up the mountain.
Delivers the death blow. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
By the time Kuss came up, it was just... Ned and I were saying it was like the top 10 of the Tour de France were there when Kuss pulled off.
Literally.
Well, probably, when they get to Paris, likely that's the top 10 of the Tour de France where they left.
I find it slightly depressing. It's like, you know, Formula 1 and you get the best pilot and the best car with the best mechanics and, you know, and the best technology. And there you've got, you know, Roglic, Dumoulin. I mean... God, thank God Steven Kruijswijk isn't here as well.
Yeah.
You know?
I think they were lucky, not lucky actually, but the climb did suit Van Aert really well for him to do that specific job. It might have been a bit different if it was a real mountain. They might have looked a bit, you know, they would have had Sepp Kuss there.
I think that's exactly right. It's a very specific, I mean, every climb is a very specific climb, isn't it? Yeah,
indeed. Movistar were good today, weren't they?
Got there in the race.
What were they racing? Tour of Hungary? Or
so
it's
unusual, isn't it?
It's so weird to see
Movistar at this anonymous. They're a big, big, big team, and they represent a nation that has won stuff, you know. And they're just not on the race.
Yeah, but sadly,
Carapaz lost a bit of time today, Matt. Higuita lost a bit of time today.
Carthy.
Higuita. It's funny. Carthy was looking good,
better than Higuita today.
Yeah, he did.
But I wonder.
Totally justifying his selection. I was quite surprised that he got the ride at the tour because I haven't seen. Maybe I just haven't watched in enough detail. I haven't seen that much of Hugh Carthy for a year or so.
Yeah, he was really strong in the Giro. He was really strong in the Giro last year, wasn't he?
Was he?
Yeah, really good.
There you go. You should pay attention.
Well,
still 16 riders. Amazing. So within 17 seconds.
The final stage of the Tour de Suisse. He did 100 kilometres or something, 60 kilometres or something on his own. Mm. Absolutely brilliant and won it by a minute.
Didn't quite happen for Adam Yates today.
No. It just never ramped up.
I don't know if the guys had seen the climb, the directors or the riders, but even in the profile, kind of when you look at the percentage of the gradient, it's never going to happen.
It's weird how this kind of, like, with hindsight, you're absolutely right, Peter, but why all this excitement about this being this great opportunity? Of course, it was a good opportunity. He's only 4 seconds back. I think people were extrapolating from that battle on the Col d'Huez and saying, well, it's just going to be a repeat of that.
It's a totally different stage, wasn't it? And also, I don't know why they just didn't let the break go away to Koenig.
It was a bit...
I don't know.
Yeah. I think the brakes had the same question.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I think the other thing is just the way that our memories work. That is to say... memory or history works. In 1971, you know, Ossier Mellet gained this kind of the status of this extraordinary scene of the great breakaway by Kenya. But of course, the breakaway took place in this sort of flow situation, and it's got the name Ossier Mellet attached to it. But that's not where by the time they were on the final slope, the breakaway, the attacking, the stage had been done. And I don't know, Ocaña probably lost time on the final climb, but what didn't decide the race was the climb to Ossier Mellet. That wasn't, you know. But we do, because simply it's the name that you associate the stage with.
I personally can't remember that stage. I definitely didn't do that.
Shall I queue you up, Ned, on your favourite French rider and the most stunning attack in the final?
You could do.
So there was only one person that actually attacked on the climb.
Ah, boy, was it an attack.
It was an amazing attack. Guillaume Martin.
Yeah, he did as well.
That was the most Pierre Roland attack.
Yeah. I kind of forgot about that.
It was brilliant.
It
was a very Pierre Roland attack.
So there was only one attack on the final climb by a French rider that is worth remembering.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it was, what, 500 metres to go, 600 metres to go.
Impressive.
And it was just as Sepp Kuss pulled off, so it was that tiny little lull. And then he was in 10th position, Guillaume Martin. There was only like 12 riders left, really. And he just went bang, and it was really impressive.
He is taking, with every race, he is taking another medium-sized stride, isn't he? You'd have to say, as good as excellent as his final stage of the Dauphiné was, not all the hitters were there that he, you know, raced against today. So that's a notch better still. He keeps just turning the gas up.
I think he's just growing in confidence, isn't he, with each kind of little result he gets.
I guess so,
little result, big result. It's just giving him more and more self-belief, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. His book, Socrate à Vélo, which is a part of, it's an adaptation from his PhD in philosophy, in which he writes about philosophy.
Surely
and sport.
Not.
Who are we talking about now? Whose book?
Guillaume Martin.
He has a book.
I've got it in my hand.
He's got two books.
In my hand.
Didn't know that.
Got it in my hands. And it's a fantastic sort of imagined Tour de France, in which the peloton is made up of national teams, all of whom bring their philosophers.
What?
To the race. So the Greeks are obviously the favourites. They've got their packed with talent, right? The Germans are
team
sort of like the Bora Hansgrohe of the team. You know, they've got these dark horses, these kind of look quite gloomy looking characters like Nietzsche.
Heidegger
and all that. Mm. Wittgenstein. Oh no, he's Austrian, wasn't he? Wittgenstein.
Mandarin figures.
Yeah, yeah. And Great Britain have the plucky Bertrand Russell. Right, amongst others, who Bertrand Russell finds himself in the yellow jersey late on at the beginning of the third week when the race gets to La Planche des Belles Filles, right? And this is what happens. I've just been reading this. I'm going to, forgive me, I'm kind of simultaneously translating it as I read it. On the climb, right, the size of the peloton is visibly reducing. There are no more than 30 in the front group after about a kilometre of climbing. When Aristotle gets on the front, halfway up the climb, the rhythm accelerates again. There are riders dropping one by one off the back. Bertrand Russell, the maillot jaune, is one of the riders in difficulty. Informed of this fact in his earpiece, Socrates, hyper-motivated, profits from that moment to launch a violent attack. Only now four riders are able to hold his wheel, one of whom is Plato. The Greeks have delivered a coup de grace on this first confrontation on the mountain. And 300 metres from the line, for those of you who know La Planche des Belles Filles, this is absolutely true, as the race route violently raises itself upwards, Socrates attacks from the back without dropping from the big plate, from big ring. His adversaries, surprised, react too late, and Socrates has the victory that he has desired for himself all his life. I would suggest that Guillaume Martin is Socrates, and when he finally rides to victory on the Tour de France, it's going to be a fabulous moment, because it's just that he's the most improved rider. Is that right? I'm just going to float it out there, and you can disagree if you can think of someone better. He's the most improved rider of 2020. And we could talk about sprinters, you know, everyone else.
I'm just amazed that he's wrote a book.
You're the only one in the ITV team that hasn't.
Chris Bourbon's written a book. Gary Imlach's written a book. Matt Rendell's written books. So I've
well,
written books.
Not one coming David anytime Middleton. Soon. Like.
No.
No. But what I mean, I'm just like, you see these guys as just bike riders, and not many bike riders when they're riding write a book.
Write PhDs in philosophy.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of them write biographies or whatever. Yeah. Autobiographies.
He's written a play as well that is Mother's Theatre Group.
There's so much more, obviously, that. See, him as a biker. I mean, so you just get into the off season, just think, oh, I'm just going to write this mad book about like Greek gods going up Planche des Belles Filles.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's mad, isn't it?
He must take defeat really well, though, mustn't he?
Philosophically,
yeah.
Yeah,
I think
true.
He does actually.
Yeah.
With philosophy,
I think he's a real battler, though, isn't he? And Cedric Vasseur, we're going to try and get
him. We're going to call him tomorrow
on the live show.
He's obviously got an imagination.
Cedric Vasseur is the boss of Cofidis.
The boss of Cofidis, who hired him and said, I'm going to turn you into a podium rider on the Tour de France. And everyone went, right, okay.
See, Nietzsche, even though Nietzsche wrote Also sprach Zarathustra, he's no climber. He might have loved the mountains. A bit like Sean Yates, always getting photographs of himself in the mountains.
I've read this
book.
I've read this book. And
Nietzsche's not
like
a climber.
Nietzsche's like Peter Sagan. He goes rampage. No,
that's right.
No, he's a bit more like Bernardino. He goes on angry, mad, rampaging, impossible sort of solo moves.
That's
what Nietzsche is.
I think there's
a bit of
self-sabotaging.
Bertrand Russell's Geraint Thomas.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Nice. I thought of him as Tim de Klerk, kind of. Right? Tim de Klerk's father was a reader in logic at the Catholic University of Leuven.
David Miller made me laugh because you said this on air, and then you said quite rightly that he then, you know, left his job to become a comedian. And then there was a little pause, and David Miller said, "That's not very logical," which I thought was quite funny. Pete, going back to your book that you haven't written, if you did write a book, like a sporting memoir, obviously, it would have your picture on the front. Mm. What would you call it?
Oh, I have thought about this, but...
A tale...
PK Manx.
Manx.
Don't know.
Manx.
Don't think I'll write a book.
PK Manx.
I'll tell you what.
PK Manx.
We'll come back to this.
Yeah.
I'll think. We'll come back
people...
To this.
In fact, should we invite our listeners in to suggest titles for your book? That'd be quite fun.
You set me up here on your
And maybe content.
And maybe content.
Yeah, Nairo Quintana out-sprinted Julien Alaphilippe in a mountain stage finish today.
Yeah.
Could it be classified as out-sprinting, though?
No.
I mean, it's kind of... By that point, it's he just got to the line before Alaphilippe.
In a sprint.
In a sprint.
Well, that is a very fine philosophical distinction you're drawing there.
I don't think it... Because it wasn't an actual match sprint, was it? It was a race to the line.
Because you could say Guillaume Martin out-sprinted Nairo Quintana and Julien Alaphilippe, which means that Guillaume Martin is a better sprinter
than
Julien
Alaphilippe. There is no contradiction in those two propositions.
A funny fact. The Worlds, one of my last races I did, Worlds in Austria.
An enormous attack.
Yeah. No, I was in the group with Nairo, and we were coming into the sprint, and I didn't know anyone was sprinting. I kind of just like led it out from like 500 to go, thinking I'll just bring it home. And Nairo picked me on the line 14th. Yeah, like, literally, honestly, 10 meters to go, just went boop. I was like, you
git.
Yeah, couldn't believe it.
That's great.
So he's obviously a good sprinter. I mean,
that's one of those embarrassing sprints, isn't it? Where you start it and you're kind of committed, and then you don't want to look.
I don't think anyone's going to come round. Yeah.
Really care, but I'm going to keep going hard. Yeah. And I'm not going to look, just in case people do think I care.
But then, when it happened, I was like, well, I actually should have gone full out to stop that happening, because I was sprinting anyway.
It's just disrespectful.
It's very disrespectful, I can't believe it. It's like, do you know who I am?
Do you know who I once was?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was that. I was still that then.
That's a title to your book. That's a great
book. Do you know who I won't be for long?
That's a philosophical. Yeah. Do you know who I am? That's like a real deep kind of peak. Investigation into yourself.
Yeah, because no one does.
Yeah.
Including myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it works on multi levels.
I'm on a voyage of discovery.
Yeah. You take the reader on the voyage of the discovery of yourself.
That they will never find, because I still haven't.
In search of Pete Kenyuk. There you go.
Chapter one.
Where am I?
I am the Greek god.
I'm sorry, I'm lying down in a field full of circular... Hey,
surrounded by these
strange objects. Where am I?
As I lay here on writing chapter one of my Theosaurus, learning new words each day.
Oh, yeah, pitch new words. I forgot about it.
Yeah, it's in the post. Got it. Lauren's sending it over.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. Right, anyway, back to racing or podcasting.
Well, Primož Roglič, some words from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite a fast day, actually. Quite hard. But the guys did again. Really good job. I was all the time in a good position, and at the end I could do a nice sprint, so very happy.
Yeah, the you don't get the yellow jersey because it'll stay on the shoulders of Alaphilippe. Is that good news for the moment?
It's the news that I have to accept. I don't really care. It's just, like I say, again, a nice day. We stay safe. At the end we even win, so even better. So. We have to continue like that.
You seem to be at your top again after the crash during the Dauphiné. You seem to be doing good.
Coming back, what can I say? I, we see that, yeah, still I'm coming back now. I can race, and like I said, every day I feel a little better, so it's nice to ride the bike again.
And you must feel a lot better in your head, too.
Yeah, definitely, but I already got a proof on second stage that, okay, that I'm ready for the start, definitely, and yeah, we need to continue with the whole team. Good job.
Thank you very much.
Any other interviews?
Well, we're about to find out.
Okay.
Tadej, Primož first, you second. How big a day is this going to be for Slovenian sport and Slovenian cycling?
For sure it's going to be big. Probably more focused on Primož. Thank God. But yeah, it's really a good day. Feels super good to finish behind Primož when he raised up his hands. Shame it wasn't me, but yeah, it will be more opportunities for sure, but I'm satisfied.
And you've got the white jersey. You'll probably say that's an objective, but there are plenty of other people who think you can contend for the yellow. What do you say to that?
Yeah, like I said before, in this tour, the competition is really high, and also for the white jersey and yellow jersey. So if I go for the white, I can try for the yellow too.
Tom, talk to us about the last climb.
Yeah, hard, huh? And nice that Jarl is perfect for Primož. He's very quick, and yeah, it's amazing that he finishes off. I think it was the best today, and yeah, nice to win with the team. Nice to get that first win.
How were you feeling?
Personally, not good. No, I was hoping for better legs, but today it wasn't for me.
Usually these climbs 6 to 7%. I mean, you usually love them, don't you?
I'm also good at the steeper ones. yeah, when you're in shape, you can do anything. When you're feeling a little less, then anything is hard.
Wout van Aert rode like about three men today. I mean, how much of a bonus is it for the team to have him climbing so well?
Ah, that's amazing. I mean, we knew that we were coming here with a really, really strong team, probably the strongest team in the whole tour. And it's always the question if you have the strongest leader as well. And today we definitely had him.
Thanks, Tom. Egan, talk to us about the last climb from your point of view.
Well, it was an explosive climb. I mean, it was really fast. It was a really short climb and really punchy in the final. I think it was a good climb to see how the GC riders are. So yeah, I'm really happy to just arrive with them because it was hard. It was really hard.
And we saw in the Dauphiné that Roglic keeps doing this in the last 500 meters of mountain stages. He keeps getting away and getting bonus seconds. Is that a bit of a worry?
It's not good when another GC rider takes some seconds, but I think we need to be really patient and to know that our best scenario is to arrive to the third week without losing too much time, and then try to recover a little bit of time in the long climbs. So yeah, for us we'll be all about to minimize the time in these stages and arrive as fresh as we can and to the last week.